everyone, and welcome to First Things First on this Christmas Eve. I am Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter.
Merry Christmas, Nick Wright.
We made it another year. It's great to see you both.
Absolutely. Just wash them. Wash them, put a little lotion on them, got it ready to go.
I love that that is the first thing he's saying. It is very nice to be spending this morning with both of you and with you at home because there is so much to talk about. The Steelers are on the brink of elimination. Oh, another year, another divisional title for Brady and Belichick. Dak and the Cowboys look playoff ready, but we will start our three-hour program this morning with a thriller from late last night. The Chiefs were in Seattle to face Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. We picked this great game up in the third quarter. Wilson to Doug Baldwin to put the Seahawks up 24-17. One of three touchdown passes for Wilson last night. In the fourth, Pat Mahomes gets out of the pocket, finds DeMarcus Robinson for the touchdown. Mahomes also had three touchdown passes. 1:20 left. Chiefs go for the onside kick, but they're unable to recover it, and time runs out on Kansas City. 38-31 was your final score. So Seattle clinches a playoff berth. That after starting the season 0-2. Chiefs have not clinched the one seed yet. Let us kick off this postgame sound with Russell Wilson after Seattle's big win.
I think for us, it's been a really special year. It's been amazing just to see us come together as a collective effort. You know, everybody was counting us out, you know, early on, and we had no fear, you know, and I think that, you know, there's a lot more that we want to do. We're not stopping here.
We've been in every game that we've lost, but we have to find ways to win. And as we go into this next week against the Raiders, I mean, they're going to be ready to play us, and we got to find a way to win. And then you get to the playoffs and you have to find a way to win these games, and we haven't been lately. And so that's the most frustrating thing, but everybody's got to step up. We got to find a way to go out there and win big football games.
Pat Mahomes said it. They've been in every single game that they've lost so far. Three of their four losses this year have been on the road to very good teams. But let's start on the other side. How did the Seattle Seahawks pull off the win last night, CC?
Well, they've stayed with their formula, the way that Pete Carroll, when they started the season, they started a little slow. They started off, we're going to throw the ball with Russell Wilson, same way they had done the 2017 season. That was going to be hard to do, too, because Doug Baldwin missed almost all the training camp. Immediately, him and Brian Schottenheimer had a come the Jesus meeting, and he told him, listen, we're not rebuilding, but we are going to retool this offense. We're going to run the football. We're going to be physical. They're first in the NFL. You can see the reason why. They stuck to that formula, dominating time of possession. I remember when we used to get our defense, and Tony Dungy used to be our defensive coordinator. He used to talk about the amount of effect of time of possession. And once you get to about 32 to 34 minutes, the defense, they really start to show the signs of wear and tear if they have to stay on the field. So always had that in mind, 35 minutes time of possession. When you talk about these explosive offenses, and you always ask this question, well, Chris, how are they going to win the game? We'll keep Patty Mahomes on the sideline because Patty Mahomes has played spectacular on the road, even better than playing at home. So it's not Patty Mahomes, but their inability to be able to run the ball when they want to, inability for their defense to get off the field. Like, I don't believe with that defense, it's going to be hard to win a Super Bowl, hard to impossible to win a Super Bowl with their defense and their inability to play good pass coverage.
On the Seattle side of things, because I know we're going to get more heavily into the Chiefs side of things, I know, C, one of your pet peeves about shows similar to this one, maybe even this show at times, is too much focus just on the quarterback and not enough focus on the other 52 guys on the football team. But I do want to say, since you said all those things about Seattle, something about Russell Wilson for a moment. He is as clutch of a quarterback as we have in this league. I was shocked that the Seahawks, in the spot they were in, where the Chiefs couldn't stop him on the ground, the Seahawks were up four, that they were still throwing the ball, or up three, still throwing the ball late. And Russell Wilson made two of the most perfect passes. The one that he threw seemingly up, straight up in the air, that dropped right in the arms of Doug Baldwin, and the tipped catch to himself down the sideline. What he did late in this game was spectacular. You have talked all year about how much they've missed a healthy Doug Baldwin. Last night was the healthiest he's been. And credit to Sunday Night Football for showing this stat. Tyler Lockett this year, when targeted, 55 catches, almost 900 yards, 9 touchdowns, and a perfect passer rating from Russell Wilson when targeting Doug Baldwin. Oh, and we're not, it's not through 3 weeks of the season. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been targeted nearly 70 times, a perfect passer rating. When you marry that with maybe the league's best rushing attack, certainly the NFC's best rushing attack, this makes Seattle a very dangerous team. And credit to them, since Russell's been there in the playoffs every year except for last year. Last year, they went into the fourth quarter of Week 17 alive for the playoffs. And now they're back this year.
So composed. Is there a quarterback you trust more in the NFC other than Russell Wilson? But let's talk about the Chiefs now. So you look at this team, and what do you think about what you saw yesterday and what they have to do now heading into Week 17?
Well, we knew ultimately they have to replace the productivity of Kareem Hunt. I didn't think they would be able to do that. Other people think otherwise. They're not as good of a team. They don't have that constant threat to be able to run the ball, and also the dual threat that he was. Also coming out of the backfield, their overall speed, what they can do sideline to sideline, you don't see them run that many little speed sweeps and everything because Sammy Watkins being injured, hadn't practiced in a couple weeks, so is he going to come back? So this offense is not as explosive as it was earlier in the year. Missing Sammy Watkins, missing their all-pro running back, and you can start to see that. They're starting to keep them in front of them, not let throw the ball over top of their head. And Patty Mahomes, especially early in games, trying to make the extreme, the big play compared to getting first downs. It was early in this game. Yes. He had a couple opportunities. He could have either ran or even thrown for a shorter pass. He decides to go deep. They end up getting off the field, get that Seattle. That's why they end up losing time and possession. I don't need all the trick shots. I compared them to Steph Curry. Steph Curry, when he warms up, man, he looks spectacular. But in the game, his fundamentals are sound. And Patty Mahomes, that's what I see, especially early in games, trying to rely on the spectacular play compared to just the basic fundamental plays.
Is that a youth thing? Is that an inexperienced thing?
I think he's shown nerves in some of the biggest road environments he's been in. The game in New England, he missed some throws early. This game, he missed some throws early. And I was watching specifically for the things Chris talked about last week against the Chargers, because I didn't notice as much in the Chargers, where he had the opportunity to take an easy play and tried to make a great play. And very early in this game, there was
first series of the game,
they have 3rd-and-2. He could have just run for it. He has it in front of him to run for it. Instead, he tries to go for a 40-yard pass, and they get off the field. And that ended up being critical. Now, I agree with Chris that the offense is not as good without Kareem Hunt. I still think this offense, even without Kareem Hunt, is the best offense in the NFL. But that's not what's going to prevent them from either getting to or winning the Super Bowl. This defense right now, unless they get a devastating offensive penalty, a hold in a terrible spot, or Chris Jones gets home, you're just hoping the other team drops a pass. Like, you're just hoping the other team screws something up. There was, watching this game last night, there was no time where you were like, oh, the Chiefs are going to get off the field here. The couple times it looked like they did get off the field, they got called for defensive either pass interference or defensive holding in the secondary. The defense is hugely problematic. The only glimmer of silver lining, if there's one for Chiefs fans, is that the defense has been far better at home, whether it's the crowd noise, the environment, and despite the loss last night, if they beat the Raiders in Week 17, everything will go through Kansas City. But if they get to the Super Bowl, much less win it, it'll be the worst defense to ever have done that in the Super Bowl era. Like the Chiefs, eye test and statistical test, this would be the worst defense to make it to a Super Bowl.
What does the Kansas City offense have to do to not put the game in the defense's hands, besides just score a ton of points?
Score every time.
Is that just going to be stay on the field as long as possible?
Well, they have to develop another wide receiver. If you limit Travis Kelce, if you take away Tyreek Hill, who's going to be their other guy? They had so many explosive players to begin the season. Now they signed Kelvin Benjamin. He's on the roster, didn't utilize him last night. Who's going to be that other third receiver, second wide receiver, because Kelce is a number one in himself. Because when you get bogged down, you can see in last night's game, they don't have anyone that they feel comfortable to go to on a regular basis.
And late in the game, a critical drive when it looked like after the big play to Tyreek Hill down the sideline, when it looked like they were going to be able to tie the game up, They did throw a pass to Kelvin Benjamin. And Kelvin Benjamin, right in front of the end zone, did what he's done his whole career. Let it hit him on his numbers and dropped it. Like, he had one legitimate chance to make a play and couldn't do it. But that's one of the things the Chiefs had as an edge early in the year. They didn't have a Kelvin Benjamin in their receiving core. Everyone that they put out there was a dynamic weapon for a different reason. With no Sammy Watkins, Chris Conley regressing a bit, Kareem Hunt being gone, they all of a sudden don't have as many ways to kill you.
Add that to what they have on defense.
The defense is
the
killer.
And there's some questions. All right, got to take a break. Coming up, did Mike Tomlin cost the Steelers a chance at the postseason? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back. Coming up on New Year's Eve, it's the Red Box Bowl, and it kicks off between Oregon and Michigan State. That's at 2:30 Eastern on Fox. Then flip it over to FS1 as number 17 Utah battles number 22 Northwestern in the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl at 6:30 Eastern. And catch it all on the Fox Sports app. Back here on First Things First. We'll get to Steelers and Saints in a second, but first, watch the tackle from Falcons kicker Matt Bosher on Kenyon Barner.
This was an energy play for Atlanta right after this. They actually started playing really well after this play. Go ahead, see.
This might be the most impressive special teams tackle by a kicker or a punter. I'm willing to bring some other videos. Man, he takes dude off the ground and slams him. Now, you're just not going to be able to see this.
And the refs give him a little room for taunting, too. Stands over and flexes on him a bit.
He couldn't believe he did it. Eagles, Texans.
Don't try that again.
It feels like every Monday we're talking about a great catch by DeAndre Hopkins. Well, it's Monday, and there's another great catch by DeAndre Hopkins.
That's why he has the best hands in the business. You can throw it anywhere. When they talk about catch radius, man, they have his picture in there as far as low, high, one-hander. Man, he's a special, special wide receiver.
And he went into the locker room during pregame warmups. They weren't sure if he was going to play. He played great the whole game.
More from this game. Deshaun Watson breaking about 30 separate tackles there. Throws a dart to keep the drive alive.
If the Texans could have held on to win, because this was part of a 13-point comeback right here, this would have been one of the better plays of the entire NFL season by a quarterback. Deshaun Watson was spectacular.
3rd and 11. Man, everyone depended on him to make a play. Makes 3 guys miss. And that Philadelphia rush and delivers a strike down. Impressive. Impressive what he did late yesterday.
But the Eagles made Eagles fans very happy yesterday. We'll talk more about that. Finally, Chiefs Seahawks, Doug Baldwin with a spectacular one-handed catch.
Doug Baldwin getting it done late in the game. No need to get the pass interference. They would have gotten the ball inside the 10-yard line because you want the catch here. Doug Baldwin finishes off. Great game. Run some great routes after really struggling with some injuries throughout the season. They are a different offense when Doug Baldwin is healthy.
Pete Carroll trusts Russell Wilson so much, man. Late in the game, they're already in field goal range. They make a couple first downs from running out the clock. Nah, let him throw it deep. Doug Baldwin wouldn't have made the play.
All right, fantastic game in New Orleans yesterday as the Steelers were trying to keep their playoff hopes alive. We picked this up in the fourth quarter. 4th and 5, Steelers up 4. They call a fake punt on their own 42, and they come up about a yard short. So the Saints come in. Drew Brees methodically works the ball down the field while eating up the clock and, not surprisingly, capping off a drive with a great catch from Michael Thomas. That put the Saints up 31-28. Yeah, that was a touchdown. Big day for Thomas, posted 11 catches, 109 yards. Steelers would have one last chance, 41 seconds left. Juju Smith-Schuster makes the catch, but he is stripped, and that is the game. This is the third time in December the Steelers have lost by 3 points. They now need a lot of help if they're going to make the playoffs. Here is what Juju Smith-Schuster had to say about that costly fumble after the game.
This feeling sucks. I've never felt this feeling before, and you know, it's tough to go out like that.
I just wanted to be aggressive. I wanted to ensure that we had an opportunity to win the game. I thought, first of all, I liked the play, the concept. I thought we had a chance to get it, but I thought where the game was and the time in which was left in the game, I thought that if we did not stop them, that we would have an opportunity to have the ball last, and we did. But obviously, unsuccessful nonetheless.
The story's not written yet. I told the guys in there, I said, listen, it's not over yet. This chapter, the story's not done. Obviously, we don't control it, but let's see what happens.
Look, this was not all on Juju. There were a couple different questionable plays and calls that the Steelers could have lost this. The Stephen Ridley fumble, mm-hmm. the fake punt, and then, of course, the Juju strip. See, what do you think was the biggest key in the Steelers' loss yesterday to the
Saints? A number of mistakes. Joe Hayden pass interference twice. Took away potential big plays. One on fourth down, gives them the ball right there at the doorstep of the goal line. Another one, when they're trying to throw the ball, he's holding the wide receiver, both his hands outside. As you mentioned, Ridley, the momentum lost there when he fumbled it. Tomlin, I don't agree with him. I didn't think that was a good call. I would have punted in that situation because even in that situation, there was enough time that they would have gotten
the ball back.
Why take a chance on a play like that and risk one play, because potentially even if he picks up the first down, they still could get stopped, have to punt to New Orleans, and New Orleans could still drive down the field. So it wasn't, to me, it wasn't close enough to the end of the game to be able to take that type of chance. So a number of mistakes made by their key players, key personnel, that leads to Pittsburgh losing this game in New Orleans.
Listen, and this is the story of their season. The turnovers, they lose the turnover battle again. They're now minus 10 on the season. Some awful penalties at the worst time. But you mentioned the pass interference penalties. The one on Joe Hayden, and Mike Tomlin said, we never blame the officials. The one on Joe Hayden, when
in
it was fourth and four, and it's the Steelers are up 3-0 in the first quarter, was an egregious call that was an enormous swing in the game. It's Steelers' ball if they don't make that call at midfield with the lead, and instead it's Saints' ball at the doorstep. All of the retired officials who are online or on Twitter or on the broadcast, all of them, including the one calling that game, said, I don't know what the referee is seeing there. And so you got to be able to play through that, but that is a 7-plus point swing there, Steve.
Yeah, I disagree with you slightly, and the reason why is because when you prevent someone from jumping, a lot of times the referee, what he's reading is the wide receiver. And if he can't make a play on the ball and you have a hand in his back, visually he sees the hand in his back. Kamar is a great athlete. He can't even get off the ground. That's what makes the referee be able to call it, because he reads the body language of the athletes on the field. So I don't agree with you. If you put your hand in a guy's back, you prevent him from jumping because both guys have a right to the ball. That's the reason why they called that there. That's why I had that in the reason of mistakes that I thought. Joe's been playing long enough. He realized he makes the key interception last week against New England. You cannot put your hand in the middle of someone's back and you gain an advantage. Also, it's fourth down. He shouldn't have been trying to catch it anyway. He should have been trying to knock it down in that situation.
That's definitely true, because an interception there is worse than an incompletion for the defense. We're not going to agree on that one. I thought that was obviously an awful call, but the Steelers, despite that, had the lead late. And on the fake punt, like, I understand Tomlin's logic, which is, if we're not going to pick up a first down, what I would like to do is have the Saints have a short enough field that I know we're going to get the ball back. But if that's your mentality, A, it means you don't trust your defense at all. But B, then just run your offense out there. If you're going to go for it, like, I understand your point that just punt it away, but if you're not going to punt it away, if you're deciding you're going to go for it, I don't want Roosevelt Nix to have the ball in my most important play of the situation when he needs 5 yards, no matter how well it's drawn up. He's right. It was open. It was drawn up. And you still didn't get it. I'd rather let Big Ben and A.B. or Juju have the opportunity. And the other one is the turnovers. Stephen Ridley fumbled when they had a lead in the fourth quarter. And then Juju fumbled when they had a chance to kick a game-tying field goal and force overtime. But that's the story of the Steelers' season.
The whole season.
And, I mean, we can just what's the key to this game? The loss in Denver. The blown lead against the Chargers, the loss in Oakland. That's the key, because if at the beginning of the year, if I said, hey, weeks 15 and 16, you go to New England, to New Orleans, what are you really hoping for? 1-1. And they got that. It's the three preceding weeks that made this a must-win that potentially wrecks their season.
All right, let's talk about the Saints, because all week long we wanted to see a resurgence of this offense, the offense we saw earlier on in the season. What did you see from Drew Brees in the offense that either made you feel better or worse heading into the last week of the season?
Well, you could see that Sean Payton has decided, not only besides Michael Thomas, they're going to utilize him, but they have to try to be able to get the ball to other people. You can see Teddy Ginn back off the injured reserve. He is an impact player for them. They utilize him the right way. You can see him making a couple splash plays. But when it comes down to it, Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara, their ability to be able to get mismatches week in and week out, and now you can see that they're back to highlighting Alvin's ability to be able to either run the ball or to be able to catch him in space. He's a tremendous space player, one of the best in the league. And Drew Brees' ability to be accurate and them playing at home, they're a different team. But you could see this offense was a lot better playing back at home. So it was exciting to see. They looked almost like they looked earlier in the season.
And the Ted Ginn addition, right after that fake punt, the first play after the fake punt's a holding penalty. All of a sudden, it's 3rd and 20 with the Saints down 4. And who comes through for him? Ted Ginn with a 25-yard catch that put them right at the at first and goal from, I think, the 6 or 7 yard line. An enormous play right there. And in the whole league going into week 17, nobody has wrapped up even a bye except for the Saints, who have wrapped up the number one overall seed. Everything's going to go through New Orleans.
All right, time now for Put a Grade On. It's sponsored by CarMax. Yesterday, Drew Brees threw for 326 yards, including the game-winning touchdown pass to Michael Thomas. Nick Wright, put a grade on Drew Brees' performance yesterday.
I give him an A for the game, an A for the season. He locked up home field with a game to play. The one interception was thrown by the Saints was thrown by Taysom Hill, not by Drew Brees. Made critical plays late. It's an A. It's an A performance for the season, an A performance for the
game. You got to give him an A+. On the game winner to Michael Thomas, he's going to throw a fade route to him. Michael Thomas stumbles off the line of scrimmage. Drew Brees stays with him and converts it. Instead of throwing a fade to the back pylon, he throws a back shoulder fade right at the goal line for the clincher. So I'm going to give him an A+. I'm not in the plus and minus like Nick, but just a little football point that, you know, I thought I might point out at the end.
I love you so much. I'm not in the plus and minus just like Nick. A+.
All right, that being said, once again, the Saints clinch a one seed with that win. Got to take a break. Coming up is the Nick Foles magic back. Nobody happier to talk about that than this guy. That's next on First Things First. On Christmas Eve morning, time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Joe. Last night, Russell Wilson led the Seahawks to an impressive win over the Chiefs to clinch a playoff berth. Russell threw for 271 yards, 3 touchdowns. He also added another 57 yards on the ground. Since Wilson was drafted in 2012, he's only missed the playoffs one time. CeCe, what impressed you most about Russell Wilson's performance last night?
Man, when they needed him the most, he was the biggest. And a team that runs the ball and has that mentality, we're going to be physical. At the end of the game, the coaching staff, they trust their most talented player. And Russell was at his best. The throws that he made in spaces to be able to get them, to be able to move down the field and keep that aggressive mentality. Man, I love it. I love the way the coordinator trusted Russell Wilson.
Since the day he came into the league, he and Tom Brady have been the two most clutch quarterbacks we've seen in my eyes. And now with Brady deteriorating, looks like the crown is his. He is so good in fourth quarter situations and games. Typically in comebacks, this one come from ahead. He was outstanding again yesterday.
Moving on to New England, where the Patriots improved to 7-0 at home this season. They also clinched their 10th straight AFC East title. Now, Tom Brady wasn't good by his standards, finishing the day 13 of 24, 126 yards, 1 touchdown pass, and 2 interceptions. Nick, Brady's performance aside, how amazing is this run of 10 straight division titles for the Pats?
This is not supposed to be possible in the modern NFL, and my guess is we'll never see anything like this again. I don't think we'll ever see a team get to double-digit division titles. And the only reason it's not 16 straight is Brady blew out his knee. Like, they won 5 in a row, he blew out his knee, then they won 10 since then. This run of consistency is not supposed to happen in a parity salary cap NFL.
Yeah, it's been special from the beginning to the end. They've done it so many different ways. Just like yesterday's game, man, they're going to rush the ball. Gronk looking old, yeah. Brady looking old. But the dynasty moves on. Still a chance to be the number one seed. It's incredible.
It's crazy. On to Indy, where the Colts were big 9-point favorites against the Giants, but the Giants didn't listen to Vegas, and they played like the better team for the majority of the game, and then they woke up and realized they're the Giants. The Colts were able to come back and win by 1 point to set up a win and in-game on
A win and in-game on Sunday night against the Titans.
Nick, what was your biggest takeaway besides that sentence from the Colts' comeback win?
Andrew Luck, they get in now. He's going to instill some fear in people. They're keeping him upright. He is throwing to anybody and everybody. Eric Ebron, who's having a career resurgence, got knocked out of this game. Don't matter. Still going to execute a comeback. Luck is a special, special player now that he's healthy. And this was a critical comeback win. If they lose, their season's wrapped.
And the biggest play of the game might have been the one he made with his feet late in the game.
We were talking about
running.
That.
We've told him, man, avoid contact. Man, utilize your athleticism. He utilized it the right way at the end of the game. And this is a physical football team. Defense, not the best game they've played, but that offensive line and the defense, when they crank it up, they got a good football team,
Eli
too.
Looking spry.
Saturday night football. Ravens in L.A. to face the red-hot Chargers. We'll pick this up in the third quarter. The rookie, Lamar Jackson, to the rookie, Mark Andrews, for a big 68-yard touchdown. Put the Ravens up 13-10. Fourth quarter. Phillip Rivers hits the always dependable Antonio Gates. Gates gets stripped. Tavon Young returns this for a touchdown to put the Ravens up 22-10. They go on to win it. Big road win for them. Ravens now in the driver's seat to win the AFC North. A win against the Browns next Sunday will give them a playoff berth. Lamar Jackson improves to 5-1 as the Ravens starter this season. Here he is after the win.
Well, I'm used to playing in, you know, big stages, people doubting us and stuff like that. My job is to go prove them wrong, play football. We can play with anybody, you know, any great team. You know, that was a great team we played out there. Great defense, great offense. You know, we just can fight, and everyone sees that now.
It's a good defense, and they outplayed us today. And depending on what happens, we may get another crack at them in 2 weeks.
CeCe, we keep saying the defenses are going to figure Lamar out and they're going to have to change the game plan, but so far their game plan is working. How were the Ravens able to beat the Chargers?
No, they made some adjustments in this one. They threw the ball down the field. They were far more aggressive. I had said an odd number last week.
You were close. 220.
220 yards. We was like, 220 yards. Yeah. But they threw for 200.
I know.
And if the defense finally created the turnovers that we were not used to them seeing, they were just playing great defense without the turnovers and their ability to make a few big plays in the passing game, because defense still wins. No matter what you say, no matter all the records, all the stats and everything, this defense, because not only do they have the rush, they have that pass coverage that is hard for teams to be able to deal with. So this defense in the playoffs, man, they're one of the more frightening teams because of the offense is very, very different, very, very physical. There's not a lot of teams that have this type. So NFL, when you play a team like them, it's like when Tim Tebow. Now, it took a long time for teams to catch up to him, but the style is hard to practice against. It's like in college, if you face a team that runs the wishbone, you're like, whoa, it might take you two and a half quarters to get adjusted to it. Then, typically, it's hard to find the beat of the game. That's what Baltimore is right now with that strange running attack with their quarterback leading the way.
It's like playing Georgia Tech. Like, where you're going to run you're going to face the triple option once all year, so you can't practice for it all year, and they catch you off guard. Nobody's playing football like them. Here's what our plan is. How about you don't score any points? The Chargers scored one touchdown that was set up where the drive started in the red zone because of a Ravens fumble. If they play a clean football game, you are going to have dynamic offensive players in order to be able to crack this defense. The Chargers have that. Still couldn't. Phillip Rivers was like all of a sudden getting his name in the MVP conversation. The Chargers, had they won this game, would wake up this morning as the one seed in the AFC, and the Ravens dominated them. You mentioned the pass coverage. I want to give a shout out to 10-year vet Brandon Carr, who's never missed a start in his entire career, started this game with an interception. And then who's the guy holding Antonio Gates up, waiting for someone to come punch that ball out? Brandon Carr in his 159th career game. So they and he's like their fifth best player in the secondary. Whether it's Weddle or whether it's Jimmy Smith or Carr, that's on the back end. On the front end, we know how good they are. And Lamar, that was a good step in his evolution, see, that they trusted him to throw the ball. He made the one huge play, didn't make any big mistakes.
Just to recap, we were all aghast when you said he would throw 220 yards and he threw for 200 yards. So kudos to you, CC. It's a good thing.
Spread the ball around too.
You got about football.
Sorry to interrupt you.
I was just telling a joke. So it's good that you came in there with other
words. I didn't know you were telling a joke.
Nearly as funny. Here we go. Let's talk about the Eagles fans. Yesterday they were big happy.
You were trying to choke. He's trying to get his buddy Brandon Carr in the whole secondary.
Surprising one yesterday. Texans playing for the two seed in the AFC. Eagles. fighting for wild card berth third quarter. Nick Foles to Nelson Aguilar right on the money for an 83-yard touchdown to put Philly up 23-16. Texans would answer fourth quarter. Deshaun Watson leads an 8-play, 80-yard drive, caps it off with a touchdown pass to Vincent Smith. Texans up by one. Eagles with a chance to win. But Nick Foles takes a big shot from Jadeveon Clowney. He is down in pain. He'd leave the game, but he did come back after one play. Drives the team down the field, sets up this. Jake Elliott for the game winner. Eagles win. Let me say it again. The Eagles win. Nick Foles wins. The backup threw for a franchise record 471 yards. Eat it, Eagles doubters. Eagles need a win at Washington, though, next week, and for the Vikings to lose to get the to lose to the Bears to get into the postseason. But you're telling them there's a chance. All right, CC, why was Nick Foles so successful against that Texans defense? Because few teams have been this season.
Yeah, well, typically, we always talk about the quarterback, but you have to have guys make plays. So not only spreading the ball around, we talked about last week, who was he going to go to? Goes to Alshon. This week, who does he go to? Goes to Ertz. Also gets Sproles in there. They had three receivers averaging more than 25 yards. So not only Aguilar getting into the game with his biggest game of the season, especially with the big long throw and catch, and him and the quarterback hooking up, that was a special combination. But spreading it around that the defense didn't know where he was going to go. And offensively, I swear, I know they don't do it, because I've been in too many locker rooms. I've talked to many coaches. I know they say, we don't change the game plan. But it just seems like they're just so much more aggressive. I know the reads, because there's typically four reads every pass play. Now, the quarterback, even if the coach doesn't think so, the quarterback can take the more aggressive read. And it seems that's what Nick Foles is doing in their passing game. That makes them harder to build a guard, harder to build a defend. And the wide receiving core and tight ends, running backs, they're making plays. They're like a lot of guys making plays. So they've rallied around the quarterback. We've seen this happen before. They're trying to do it the same thing that they did last year.
When you talk about them being more aggressive, this was a game that was either a three-point game or the Eagles had a lead throughout until the very end. And they went for four fourth downs. I mean, you only see four fourth downs in a game where a team's been eliminated and they're just like, screw it, or where they're getting blown out throughout the game. They were four for four on those four fourth downs. What the Eagles had scored 30 points once all year against the Giants until Nick Foles took over. And in the last 2 weeks, against the Rams, a team fighting for a bye, against the Texans, a team fighting for a bye, they score 30 and 32 points. Maybe this team needs the underdog thing. Maybe they need a little extra juice. I don't know what it is, but I do know this. The only time this Eagles team has looked like a defending champion has been these last 2 weeks with Nick Foles. I don't believe in magic or mysticism, but they had that shrine to him. I don't know what to say, because I know every logical part of my brain says Carson Wentz is obviously and clearly and unquestionably a better quarterback. But how much does it matter if the team plays better with this quarterback, which is what they've done the last 2 weeks?
But you have to bake in the situation, the time of the season, and all of it, because Nick Foles did start for this team and it looked absolutely, completely different than the Nick Foles that we saw the last 2 weeks. So maybe you're right. Maybe they need
the secondary is playing better. The linebackers are playing better. The rush is a hell of a lot better. Guys are making plays. Even the hit with Clowney. He throws that ball. That's not a great throw.
Went up and got
Alshon
it.
Alshon made a great catch on that in a clutch situation. So it's a lot of guys rallying around it, and the coaching staff is putting these guys in, giving them chances that they can be able to make the play. So, man, you got guys making play after play after play. So it's a credit to that team coming together.
And if there is a level of where belief and momentum matters week to week, winning the game the way they did was almost better than if they had just held on to the 13-point lead. Oh, we've got this big lead. Our defense squanders it. Third and 10. That was third and 10 when he made that play to Alshon. Mm-hmm. And for him to – he misses one play. Dusty's guy Studfeld comes in, misses a throw, and he drives him the rest of the way down the field. And they also got very lucky with the way the rest of the weekend played out, because even if they win this weekend, they need the Vikings to lose. Well, the Bears got something to play for now. The Bears are still alive for the two seed, so the Bears are going to be going all out, you would think, against Minnesota. Man, if they get into the playoffs, I'll tell you this much. People don't want to play them. If they get into the playoffs as a six seed, like you people are. There's something with the Eagles right now. I don't think it's deniable.
Yeah, I know it's a lot better than last year, what you predicted.
Oh yeah, that's what last year. I didn't know the quarterback was damn magic. I didn't know Nick Foles in December.
You just said you don't believe in magic.
Well, if they go on another playoff run, I'm going to reevaluate my beliefs.
I got to take a break. Coming up, Dak and the Cowboys clinch the NFC East, but are they playoff ready? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we are now joined by Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott. Happy holidays. Welcome to the show, Bart.
What up, man? Everybody,
thanks for being with us. What?
Fast and fresh today, man.
We are fast.
We knew you were coming on, sir.
Fresh is what I
could. You got any presents today?
No, not today, but okay. Humbug.
All right, no problem.
All right, Bart, let's talk some Cowboys. They were back in Dallas after suffering that shutout loss to the Colts back in Week 15. Dallas was in control of this entire game, and while they didn't play great on offense, Zeke did run for 85 yards on 18 carries. Dak Prescott accounted for 2 touchdowns, 1 through the air, 1 on the ground. The 27-20 win clinched the NFC East for Dallas. Here was Dak Prescott after the game.
We got a lot more work to do. This is just the start. This is the beginning. This is something that we set out and wanted to do way back in the offseason, and this just gives us a chance to go and get the greater goal.
Bart, all week we wondered which Cowboys team we were going to see, the one that got shut out by the Colts or the one that went on that 5-game win streak. Who did you see yesterday?
I saw something in the middle, in between. Look, Tampa can score on anybody. That's a talented outfit over there. You know, but they can't stop the run. I thought they would be able to pound the ball a little better. I don't know how far this team can go. It's got to be about matchups. You know, they're much better at home than they are on the road. I don't know if they can take it on the road. You would expect that defense and run game travels. But I just don't see them as being a favorite in any of these matchups, especially if they go against somebody like the Bears, who's a better version of themselves, a more explosive offense, more dynamic offense. But they always have a chance when you have a run game. They can get turnovers like they got yesterday.
I don't know how, if you're a Cowboys fan, you could watch the game yesterday and have more confidence in your team moving forward. We knew their defense could be really good, and their defense was excellent. Randy Gregory had a strip sack, and then Jalen Smith showed that he is as healthy as he was pre-injury at Notre Dame, made a great play. They set up another touchdown with a mishandled handoff between Jameis Winston and the running back. Randy Gregory scooped that one up, almost scored, set up that drive inside the 4-yard line. But I said I wanted to see at least 2 of these 3 things improved upon. Red zone offense, keeping Dak upright, and explosive plays. They had 1 explosive play the entire game. 31-yard pass to Michael Gallup. They did keep Dak upright against a very poor pass rush, but in the red zone, like, I'm going to give them an incomplete. One time in the red zone, they got held to a field goal. Another time, after a really odd play to Amari Cooper on first, they had 1st and goal from the 3. They end up kicking a field goal. Another time in the red zone, they set up on the 4-yard line because of the Randy Gregory play. And the one time they did score a touchdown, or the other time they scored a touchdown, they were screwed on that play. Dak took an awful sack, and they got a very fortunate face mask penalty that reset it for him. Like, they weren't sharp in the red zone there. So the concerns I had about Dallas going into the game, we're just confirmed in this football game.
A lot of it's going to be based on what Bart says. Their defense is good enough to be able to put them in championship conversation. But ultimately, will they be able to throw the ball? Will they be able to make enough big plays? Will they be able to generate enough offense in the red zone, touchdowns compared to field goals? And will the defense, besides playing good defense, can they give you that extra possession? Can they give you that? Can they score on defense? Because those are game changers. We saw with Baltimore playing against the Chargers, and if Dallas can continue to do that, it's about matchups. It looked potentially they could face Minnesota in a home game, the first game. So then they're able to get through that. Then now you're into the divisional round. I mean, they're not afraid of New Orleans. Will that offense with New Orleans defense match up? Because New Orleans could take them out or limit them in their running game. So Dallas, it's about momentum and matchups going forward, and that's what they're going to have to rely on.
That run game and making sure that they limited the possessions of the opposing offense. But the competition is going to get a lot stiffer when they get into the playoffs. And I just don't know if Dak can carry. You know, I know we saw him, you know, have a coming out party with Amari Cooper a couple of weeks ago when he went for over 200 yards against the Philadelphia Eagles. I just don't know if he can sustain that. I don't know if Dak can make enough plays down the field. So it comes back. They got some tremendous decisions to make in the offseason about who they elect to make be their core four. Do they pay Amari? What kind of deal is Dak going to make? But he's going to have to make that case through the playoffs. If he wants to get paid, he has to understand he's playing for his contract. He has to show that he can be more than a game manager. I like to still see him use his feet more. You know, right here, this is exactly what you want to see from him. We see Lamar Jackson. We see Russell Wilson. We see these mobile dual threat quarterbacks being more, you know, aggressive, you know, now that it's coming down. There's nothing to save your body for now. You know, it's no tomorrow. The playoffs for them started this week, and it's going to continue. He's going to have to make sure that he puts himself on the line.
Yeah, I think you make a great point there as far as being more aggressive. Say, well, you tell us we don't want the quarterback running. Well, you got to be yourself. Yeah. Russell Wilson, when it comes down to it, man, what is he going to do? He's going to make some plays with his feet. Now, Russell could always throw the ball. Lamar Jackson, what are they doing with him in Baltimore? Yeah. Man, they got a game plan so that he can be successful. Dak is not going to be, at this point in his career, he's not going to be 35 times drop him back. But if he can carry the ball 5 to 8 times to help enhance, to keep that backside, that defense, you talked last week, well, how are they going to get better in the red zone? We saw Dak with the quarterback keep, with the quarterback option. They called it down there. That was a designed quarterback run. Helped them this time when they're getting into the red zone. I'm with you. I would be more aggressive. Man, your body, man, listen, dedicate that to the game. Don't be trying to save it. And I just believe that that's going to be his style, and that's how Dallas is going to win a lot of football games if they're going to win.
And that's the only way I think you can score points in this league if you don't have a dynamic downfield passing attack, where your rushing attack is not just one great running back, but where you also have to worry about the quarterback getting out on the edge. And he obviously he's not the athlete Lamar Jackson is. I don't even think he's the athlete Russell Wilson is. But he had 0 rushes last week and 4 rushes this week. Right there was his only significant run play of the entire game. His 3 other runs yesterday went for -5 yards. So, like, he needs to have that be a bigger part of his game because they are not going to have a dynamic passing attack, and they are either playing Minnesota or Seattle in the first round. And I'm telling you right now, either one of those teams is going to say, okay, we are going to eliminate Zeke, see if you can beat us. Yeah. And even during this stretch where they've played great, aside from that fourth quarter and overtime against Philly, when have they shown the ability to take advantage of a team selling out against the run and make big plays down the field? Chris, you said you want to see 4 of them. We got 1 yesterday. Like that, they threw for 160 yards. They won the Bucs because the Bucs can't stop shooting themselves in the foot, and they're a really poor football team. There's a lot of teams yesterday would have lost to.
We got very excited when we saw that breakout game by Amari Cooper, and it was the culmination of mm-hmm. 3 or 4 games getting into the offense, getting comfortable with the offense, and then exploding. What's happened to Amari Cooper? Why hasn't that helped Dak?
Well, the defenses have given him more attention, but Dak, they don't believe a lot in the downfield passing game. So Amari Cooper, for me, never should be targeted 5 times unless it's a hurricane or something, the weather. Like, we can't throw the ball. Not targeted enough. And he should be the emphasis of the passing game. But there's a trust factor. And it comes with the Dallas staff. Do they trust Dak to throw the ball down the field? Because Amari, man, he is more of a intermediate and deep threat than he is that short dink and dunk stuff.
And that's, I'm sorry to interrupt, but that, I mean, you just look at who he threw the ball to. Cole Beasley and Zeke were targeted 11 times. Now, they caught 10 of them for a grand total of 74 yards. Like, the Amari and Michael Gallup are going to be the guys who are going to get some type of separation down the field, mm-hmm. going to be deep threats. Like, Dak is very, you say there's no, you never go broke taking a profit, but you can go broke just breaking even every year if you lose a little bit. Like, that's what, I mean, every time, oh, I can get a completion here, no problem, even
if it's 3 yards. We only use that phrase, you never go broke taking a profit, when you have other decisions.
Right.
All right, their primary decision is to throw it short, so.
Who's going to step up and be their number two? That's the problem, because I thought they, you know, made the move for Allen to come in and be that guy. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to be the lead guy.
Allen
he's not even on the stat sheet.
No.
You know what I'm saying? That's a problem.
He's been a bust.
Yeah, Michael Gallup's been inconsistent, a young player, but also the throws have been inconsistent. So it's hard to develop continuity in the passing game when the coaching staff doesn't believe a lot in throwing the ball down the field. That part, and Amari Cooper, you just don't see it week in and week out. That's what I would make them force me to throw the ball away from Amari Cooper, because I'm going to force feed him.
They're going to have to be creative. They're going to have to move him around into the slot. You know how it is. Guys are rolling covers to him. You got to take the target out of his back, put him off where they can't jam him, put him in a slot so that he can do some of those speedos and over routes where you can't really, you know, you really can't double him and take him away.
With all that said, another marvelous performance by the defense. The defense basically outscored Tampa by themselves if the Gregory would have gone for a touchdown. The defense was great and is in playoff form right now.
And they're going to have to be great if this offense has
any
chance. Bart, stick around. Coming up, does Tom Brady look like he's got another Super Bowl run in him? That's next on First Things First.
Brady.
Back here, First Things First, we are going viral. Baker Mayfield, big day, threw for 284 yards, 3 touchdowns in the Browns' big win over the Bengals yesterday. So how do you celebrate your 7th win? Obviously by rolling out the red carpet after the Rashard Higgins touchdown.
This was creative. They did a whole little walk the red carpet, or walk the...
I like the stroll. That's that Zoolander stroll right there.
Absolutely.
Oh, he's holding that bag. He got a bag now, too. You got to recognize the bag. That's why he's got his arm down like
that. You see the photographer, like, rolling to take the pictures like they do at fashion shows? This is really well done. They practiced this one, man.
They got too much time on their hands, man.
They've been putting it on the Bengals this
year. No, we love it, Bart.
I tell you what, Baker, man, is he grim and hue. I would have told somebody in there, sweep the leg, man. You ain't going to keep trying to embarrass me like that. We Cobra Kai on that.
Cobra Kai.
Little karate kid.
Baker's
a different type of cat.
It's going to be an amazing game this week, man. They can beat the Ravens again.
All right, let's talk some Patriots. They hosted the Bills with a chance to clinch the AFC East. The Pats relied on Sony Michel in the ground game. He ran for 116 yards and a touchdown. Pats escape with a win. They certainly didn't dominate. New England improves to 7-0 at home this season, becomes the first franchise in NFL history to earn playoff berths in 10 straight seasons. Here's what Tom Brady had to say after the win.
I think we just have grinded it out. And I think part of playing in the NFL is, you know, you over the course of 16 weeks, you see how things shake out, not after, you know, September or October, November. It's really after the end of December. And we still got one hugely important game left, and we need to finish strong.
All right, Bart, so you have the New England Patriots, and yes, they won the AFC East, but it's, as Nick would say, just because of the way they're playing. How do you view this team heading into Week 17?
I didn't know I said that.
They look like Mike Tyson. They about to face Lennox Lewis, man. And I think everybody in the playoffs should see that this isn't the same team. This is a shell of the team that they've been. They're winning with all smoke and mirrors. Because when you look at it, man for man, they're going to be outmatched, I believe, against every team that they go against in the playoffs. And if you get caught up in their mystique of who they are, who they were, then you're going to find yourself behind, because they're going to try and win in the situational type of moments. You have to make sure that you're aware of that. But I tell you what, the Ravens don't fear them. The Chargers don't fear them. I don't think Kansas City fears them. I think I would make them the underdog almost against everybody in the playoffs. I understand that they're going to have home field advantage, but they're going to go against the teams that are way more athletic than they are, and that's, I think, are ready to take that next step and dethrone these guys.
They amazingly are still going to get the 2 seed. Like the Eagles, The Eagles did them a huge favor this week, beating the Texans. So the Patriots, despite all of this, are going to get the bye and going to get the 2 seed, despite all of that.
Neither.
But last week when Josh Gordon left the team, I said the most important player on the Pats is now Sony Michel. He certainly was this weekend. Sony Michel was excellent because Brady played one of the worst games we've seen in his career, if we're being honest. Like, Brady was awful. And I know the Bills' defense is actually better than people thought. Their offense has just been really bad all year long. But look at who's Rob Gronkowski.
Didn't have a catch.
3 targets, 0 catches. You know when we should have known that Gronk might be done? When Belichick tried to trade him this offseason to Detroit.
Man, you tried to get me. You supposedly, boy, you know I just got the job, man. You tried to set me for the banana tailpipe.
You're 100% right. Like, that he tried to trade him. Gronk threatened to retire. Yeah. They brought him back. But Gronk doesn't instill fear. Who in the receiving core instills fear? Sony Michel is very good.
James White is going to have to be the key. He's going to have to be their explosives, trying to get matchups and get him vertical down the field against linebackers. But with that being said, everybody's going to know that, so they're going to bracket him and take him away as well.
And see, I know you coach James White, and you've followed him his whole career. Like, if James White's your most explosive playmaker, you got problems.
Yeah, they're going to do it by committee. You know, James White, you're going to have to definitely pay some attention to him. Their offense is going to be set around Sony Michel and the offensive line trying to run the ball. Now, they're trying to – yesterday, man, they 47 rush attempts. 29 more than Buffalo, over 200 more yards rushing than them, and not a blowout. Man, if you have those types of stats in an NFL game, like this game is going to be lopsided, you can see Brady – he's not the same Brady that we saw.
I think he eats potatoes again, man. He's off the night.
He's eating like regular people because he's playing like a regular quarterback is playing. Gronk is definitely does not have type of speed, type of quickness that we're used to seeing. Is not a threat to the defense. I wouldn't double team Gronk.
Nah.
You know, right now, I would try to take them out of the running game, try to force the ball from the middle of the field and make them throw the ball in the outside quadrants of the field, which they're going to struggle because they don't have guys that can get off the bump and run and get free and get separation on a regular basis.
Do you agree with Bart that they would most likely be the underdog going up against any of these other AFC teams?
Well, they'll never be the actual Vegas underdog
in
a home playoff game. That'll never happen as long as Brady's there. But I was watching yesterday, and this game's going on simultaneously with the Houston game, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. These guys are going to fall into a two seed. And as I watched more, I was like, I don't know if it matters.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
it matters. It matters.
It matters more to them.
Yeah, it matters that bye week and Belichick can get 2 weeks to prepare. Like, oh, that's when you're going to see the best quarterback we've ever seen. And because Brady needs some rest. Like, man, that week, bye week is significant. What Philly and Nick Foles did with the shrine there and put the magic on him. Man, that right there is going to play a huge difference because you can say whatever you want. Let's just say it plays out. Kansas City.
He gets upset.
Man, you know how many yards New England going to run against Kansas City if they get to the AFC Championship?
Yeah.
I mean, like, so... that bye week is going to be huge for New England.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something different. See, that Kansas City.
I told you, don't be trying to predict what I'm going to say. I don't even know what I'm going to say.
I thought you were going to say that Kansas City does what they've done a half dozen times in their last 20 years, which is get the one seed
and
lose in the first round, lose their first playoff game. And then everything goes through Gillette. And so, the New England could be at home the rest of the season. Right. I get that. But I just look at this team, and I look at the talent on the Chargers. I look at the talent on the Ravens defense and their ability to run the ball. I even look at what Houston and what Indianapolis can do. And I understand the Patriots have owned those two franchises in the playoffs over the last decade. I get it. I feel like all of those teams have more talent. The difference has always been, even when they've had less talent, the quarterback and the coach. Well, the coach's still there. And the quarterback's there in name. But unless he plays significantly different, that changes the match.
This is the only time in a Belichick Brady in the era that I can really remember that you can blitz Brady. Like, I wouldn't be afraid to blitz him and put pressure on him. Nick and you and I talked last week about Brady and against the blitz. Typically, that was a taboo not to do it.
Yeah.
But right now, the way he's playing, if you want to be able to win, stack that line of scrimmage, eight people, first and second down, and man, passing situation, blitz Tom Brady.
When you talk about the smoke and mirrors, when I say smoke and mirrors, you know, it's them trying to get production from Cordarrelle Patterson, right?
Yes.
That's going to be part of the run game. Mm-hmm. So now you know that's going to come with Edelman. So the scouting report's out there. You know during the playoffs they're going to try and do one of those trick plays where they're going to use Edelman's arm to throw down there. Once you recognize that and understand that this team can't line up and beat you man for man, that they don't have the athletes or the quickness at any position to be dominant.
That's what I think you were talking about more so than the number, the point spread. Man per man, they're going to be at a deficit no matter who they face in that playoff.
You don't have to double anybody. So now when you don't have to double anybody, you're going to add more people to that blitz. And to Warren Moon's point, when we talked about the interview that he did a couple weeks ago, it's Brady's legs that are starting to fail him. It's not his arm. And what happens is he can't elude pressure anymore, so that's why you see him taking bad sacks because he doesn't have the lower body extremities to make sure that he can move and get out of trouble.
And you see him, when that rush comes, chucking and ducking to a degree we've never seen Brady. What it reminded me watching yesterday was not Peyton Manning's last year, the year they won the Super Bowl, but his second to last year, where at the end of the season you saw that you saw it coming, where all of Peyton was having a great year, and then come around the beginning of December and into the playoffs, you're like, oh, wait. He's in a different phase of his career. That's where it looks like we are with Tom Brady right now. Tom V. Time be damned.
You better go get some of that ageless mail from Al Sharpton. It's mine, right?
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.